It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Aren't a lot of us happy about that? You move on to another week and new conversations, or some might say some of the same conversations, but perhaps new solutions. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. We're also live from the UT campus as we come your way here on this Monday morning. There'll be a news conference with Longhorns head football coach Steve Sarkisian coming up at 11 o'clock at the top of the hour. You will hear that news conference live here on the Horn. And I have to say to you, that it is a departure from what has been the case from head football coaches at the University of Texas in the past.
For forever.
Yeah, where there, if there was no football game, then, for the coming week, in other words, an open date on the schedule like there is this week, then there would be no news conference. Not so. Coach Sark is going to address the things that went wrong there down the stretch of the game, as well as the things that went right earlier on against Oklahoma State. So that's coming up at 11 o'clock. He stands ready to talk about it at 11. My name is Craig Way. Glad to have you with us. Glad to be joined by my co-host. Proud graduate of Florence High School.
Damn right.
And 73-7 final, or 73-6 final, notwithstanding.
No matter. Just brush it off. Yeah. Turn the page. Burn the film.
There you go.
I've been a part of some of those meetings, Craig, where, back when film, I always tell coaches, when whether we're talking to Coach Abels at Bowie or Coach Sanders at Vandegrift, even Coach Dodge, pop the tape in, what do you see? Because my formative years watching tape, it was actually still on a VHS tape. And I've been a part of some of those meetings where you burn the tape. Friday was so bad, you come in Saturday, you watch it, and then you have your little ceremony, bring the trash can with lighter fluid, and literally
burn the tape. Okay. Yeah. Of course, that is the voice of Jeff Howe. You know him best for his outstanding work at Horns 24/7. And, of course, our producer back in the studio grinding throughout the course of this weekend, the one and only Jay Donaldson. We know him as Snoop Daniel. How you doing this morning, Snoop?
Good, except for the allergies. I mean, they're like, I was trying to blow my allergies out. They were itching so bad, and it just wound up making both my nostrils bleed. So it's
who?
I know. I didn't mean to.
Oh, wow.
I know, but now it stopped itching a little, and it's not bleeding. So.
Well, that's good news.
Yes.
Glad no more bleeding from the nostrils for Snoop, at least for the time being. So we're with you up until noon, and again at 11 o'clock we'll bring in the news conference with Coach Sark here from the UT campus. So we're on campus today. Coming up here in just a few moments, we'll have our Whataburger top five performances of the weekend. Additionally, we also will have for you Jeff's Longhorn notebook here at the bottom of the hour. First hour notebook is on Mondays, usually just to was it the five plays?
We got five plays, yeah. But I've got some numbers also, kind of my theme of the week.
Okay.
Studying this on a bye week.
Numbers.
Okay. This issue Texas has with not being able to finish games, This didn't start as Sark's problem, but since he's the head coach, it is his problem now, and he's got to fix it, and I do believe it is a systemic issue, and I've got some frankly disturbing numbers on this team in close games and being in close games that shouldn't be close games, and their record in one possession games, period. So we'll get to that here in a little bit.
So stand by for disturbing numbers. Those are coming up.
It ain't pretty.
Yeah, those are coming up at the bottom of the hour. And then, of course, we have Inconceivable, and then in the 11 o'clock hour, we have the news conference with Coach Sark, and then another notebook from Jeff coming up. So we'll have all that. Other things to discuss? How about your Dallas Cowboys?
5-1. Hell of a finish yesterday, too.
Yeah, and hopefully Dak Prescott's calf injury is something that'll heal up enough during – they have the open date this week on the schedule.
Yeah.
Bye week on the schedule.
Once again, everybody flipping, oh, my gosh, he was in a boot after the game. They put you in a boot for a bad
hangnail.
So
yeah, yeah.
Doesn't mean anything.
Because it can stabilize and support and do all that sort of stuff
yep.
without you having to go to crutches.
Right.
Yeah, so – so there is that. So there's the NFL to discuss as well, other college football. How did you do on your Supreme?
You know what? Thanks a lot, Dan Mullen. Florida's about to be in that group with Auburn and Wisconsin of schools I will not trust in the pick 'em contest anymore.
How about that?
Yeah. So other than that, we had a good weekend. I called Baylor over BYU.
Yep.
So glad. Glad I did that. And then A&M Missouri. That was, yeah,
that was expected.
Was.
Yeah. Yeah. Auburn beat Arkansas. It says three straight losses now for Arkansas.
Yeah, and again, as soon as I start praising Sam Pittman's program, I give the Hogs a little love, and then they remember they're Arkansas and start losing ball games. So that's just lovely. Football season's just – other than, boy, when's the last time I was able to say this? I mean, if it wasn't for the Cowboys, it would be pretty miserable in these parts.
Yeah.
As far as football season goes, but
amen.
Those Dallas football Cowboys are our saving grace right now.
Snoop Daniel, I know you picked the Ravens to beat the Chargers,
I did.
Right?
Yeah, and they beat them good.
Yeah, they did. And you picked the Cardinals to handle the Browns.
I did.
And they beat them good.
2-0.
Yeah, they did. So there you go. So you guys had a 4-1 week then, if I'm remembering
yes.
correctly. If I'm reading that right, Jeff, it ended a 4-1 week. You went 2 out of 3 and Snoop
yeah.
went 2 for 2. Not bad. Nice bounce back for you guys. Not bad at all.
It's the best one we've had since, I think, week 2 we were a 5-0.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So
not too bad.
Definitely
not
held up your end of the deal. Snoop, you had a good Friday night with high school football.
The only thing surprising to me was Bastrop getting their first win of the season over Eastview.
Interesting you should bring that up. I'm going to get to that in just a moment as part of our Whataburger Top 5. But everything else went well for you on Friday night, a busy Friday night and all that, right?
Yeah, and into the weekend. It would have been a perfect weekend if the Dodgers had held on, but –
tell me about that. It's a 2 walk-off wins for the Braves. Hey, give them credit. Those guys are tenacious. And I thought the pitching was all kind of out of whack for LA coming out of that San Francisco series yesterday. They got a couple of days to get it turned around and figured out and then be back at home at Dodger Stadium, or it could be a surprising and unceremonious end to the season if they don't get it done. And then, of course, Astros Red Sox play tonight, Jeff, and Astros kind of waylaid and taken some body blows to their pitching, not only with McCullers out, but then also the rest of the pitching staff getting kind of battered a little bit on Saturday in the loss to the Red Sox in Game 2.
Yeah, how about not pitching to Kike Hernandez? Just pitch around that guy, maybe. Probably a good start.
Yeah, he's pretty hot right now. He's got it going pretty well. So anyway, we've got all of those things and some other topics to get to as we continue. But right now, it is time for our Whataburger Top 5.
Now, it's time for the Whataburger Top 5.
Okay, prepare to receive.
Today's edition.
Here we go.
Top 5 performances of the weekend.
Okay, this, of course, being the top 5 team performances of the weekend. Snoop, you always like it when I have a tie at number 5.
Yes.
So I got a tie at number 5. Here's your tie at number 5. Hearn shuts out Thrall 25-0. So they a big step forward for the Eagles.
So Walmart killed their town twice, but they're enjoying
kill off
some
the
success
Eagles.
On the field.
They cannot kill off the Eagles, even though Walmart killed the town. It's almost every time we do this. Every time Hearn gets mentioned, right? That you feel compelled to.
I just got
to
remind everybody
that it's the town.
It's kind of like when we get to the holiday season and everybody wants to play White Christmas and feel good. I will remind everybody about an unsavory anecdote from Bing Crosby's past that will probably ruin Christmas for somebody. But that's what I do. That's what I'm here for.
Okay.
I don't offer very much to the show, Craig. But what I do, I try to maximize it.
I understand. I appreciate that. Hearn's win, by the way, takes them to 5-3, and they're 3-1 in the district. They have an open date this week. This is Thorndale Thrall week, by the way. Big old Highway 79 battle there. Thorndale Thrall week. Thorndale is on a roll. They're the only unbeaten team in that district, and so they're 7-1 in 12-2A Division One. And Thrall, with that loss, drops to 4-3, but more important, 1-2 in the district. So that's one of the ties for the number five spot in the Whataburger top five. The other tie at that number five spot, San Marcos. You got the Rattlers there, Snoop, and, you know, John Walsh, slowly but surely, trying to get it turned, and they had a decisive win over the Maroons, 38-10, in that contest. And the Rattlers have been able to do it, Snoop, with running the football and playing some defense. And that sounds very much like John Walsh teams of the past.
Yeah, so, Jaden Brown, junior's the guy to watch. He had 440 yards the week prior, 200 last week. So
exactly. So here's San Marcos, by the way, now up to 2-2 in district. Huge game this week, Snoop. San Marcos at Del Valle. So we're going to find out, you know, because the rest of that district is going to chalk. Westlake, 7-0, 4-0 in district. They play Aikens this week. Lake Travis, 6-1, 4-0. They do play Bowie this week. But again, the Westlake, Lake Travis, and Bowie all figure to be into the postseason regardless. It's the battle for the fourth spot. Aikens is 2-2. San Marcos is 2-2. Del Valle's 1-3. Austin High's 0-4. And Hayes is 0-4. Those two pretty much out of the race. So it's a three-team race now for that fourth spot between Aikens, San Marcos, and Del Valle. And Aikens plays at Westlake this week. San Marcos plays Del Valle. So the highlight game in that week, this week, is going to be San Marcos Del Valle. The winner of that is going to have an opportunity. We'll see how it is going forward with the rest of the district finish. All right, number four, you mentioned it, Snoop. Bastrop, 21, Eastview, 18. Are you telling me, Snoop, you did not see that coming?
No, not against Eastview. Man, something's going on up there. I don't know like how they performed last year, like program best third round of the playoffs, and everybody came back for the most part, so I don't know.
Well, Bastrop, as you pointed out, was their first win of the year.
Yes.
But it does put them into the thick of the postseason race now, at least for the fourth playoff spot, if we are to believe that Rouse and Brenham, certainly, who are both 4-0 in the district, will probably get there. And Glenn is starting to rally.
They are.
Yeah, they're now 3-4, and they're 3-1 in the district. So they're 3-1 in the district. Eastview is 2-2, and they play Rouse this week. Bastrop, which is resurgent with that win over Eastview, now gets Connolly this week. That's a huge game between those two teams this week. So remember that one, Connolly and Bastrop, to see who might be having the inside track to getting the fourth playoff spot. Speaking of fourth playoff spots, number three, Vista Ridge over Westwood, 45-2. I thought this might be a competitive game and that Vista would really be pushed, but it did not happen. Rangers got the win and got it decisively, so they remain in the battle for that fourth playoff spot. Vandegrift, of course, is on a roll, and they're perfect. And then Round Rock is 3-1 in the district. Cedar Ridge is 3-1 in the district with a head-to-head win over Round Rock, of course. Stony Point is 2-2 with that win over Hutto, and Vista Ridge is 2-2. And Vista Ridge plays Hutto this week. Hutto is 2-2. So that is a critical game this week in 25-6A. Are you gathering the theme here, Snoop, that this is a week where the battle for the fourth playoff spots really ramps up in 25-6A, 26-6A, and then in the 5A ranks as well? Which brings us to number two, red hot right now, Manor Mustangs beating Hendrickson 51-7 on Thursday. And now Manor, of course, had lost that district opener. But Snoop, maybe the hottest 5A team in the area right now with the way that the Mustangs are going.
Yeah, and they're playing the other hottest 5A team in the area next this Friday in Weiss.
Yeah. I started to say, get ready for that, right?
Something's got to give. Wow, that's a monster matchup.
Yep, Both teams are 4-0 in the district. Both teams are 6-1 overall. Cedar Park plays at Pflugerville this week, and Georgetown is playing Leander this week, and Anderson's playing Hendrickson this week. But the eyes of that district certainly are going to be on Weiss versus Maynard. That's the number two. And the number one result of the weekend, the top five performance of the weekend, was, as we thought it might be, as good a matchup as there was, because both teams had the identical overall and district records last week going in. Llano 13, Lago Vista 10. Heck of a ball game, but the Yellow Jackets, a big year last year, and picking up where they left off, and the Jackets got the win 13-10 over Lago, and that's an important win for the Yellow Jackets in getting that win in Class 4A in their district to win. So congratulations to them, and Llano and Lago are expect to be headed for the playoffs. But this is also a big week at the 4A level, Snoop. Wimberley Navarro is this week, and I don't mean Navarro Early College Austin. I'm talking about Navarro down in Geronimo down there. That's a big game, and that's a win. And those two teams are unbeaten. Wimberley's 2-0 in the district. Navarro's 1-0 in district. So there it is, your Whataburger top five, the top five performances of the weekend. And it's starting to get toward that climactic time of year where we're talking about games that are going to determine district titles, or in this case, as I mentioned, this is going to be a really big week for teams that are on the outside looking in or on the fringe of falling out of playoff contention, finding a way to get there, to get a big win and put themselves in better position for the fourth playoff spot. And then on top of that, you have the Maynard Weiss battle for first place in 11-5A D1. That's going to be a lot of fun to follow. All right, that's what we have there. Coming up, we'll have the first of our Longhorn notebooks. Jeff Howell with some hard numbers to come.
We'll have five plays, but we'll also have some numbers too.
That's why I wanted to give you some extra time to sift through the hard numbers as well as the five plays that determine the game on Saturday. All right, you have a Monday edition. Don't forget, coming up top of the hour, Steve Sarkisian's news conference. We'll bring it to you live at 11 o'clock, along with Jeff Howell and, of course, our man in the studio, Snoop Daniel. I'm Craig Way. This is Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Bucket.
This is Light the Tower on the Horn. Craig Way and Jeff Howell with you on campus over at UT. By the way, a couple other things just to point out. I mentioned the big battle between Llano and Lago Vista, that of course being in 3A Division One, and now in District 13, Llano's in control. They play Blanco this week. That's going to be the battle for first place now in that one. And in 4A Division One, Snoop, you got LBJ versus Lampasas this week at Nelson Field. So that's going to be the battle for first place there. Remember, LBJ went up to Lampasas last year and won the ball game up there. Now they play the return game they're playing at Nelson. So Victor will be over there and all geeked up and ready for that matchup. And I did mention this the other day on the air, so I think it's kind of important that I point this out. I mentioned when Jeff and Purple Buffalo's daddy were going at it back and forth. Both were facing situations where I didn't know if they were going to win the games, and I said this ought to be a fun weekend because you guys were going at it.
We probably knew what Florence's fate was going to be.
I think you're right.
I love Coach Bridges and the staff over there, but it's playing the number one team in the state's a tall order.
As from playing, because you guys played some ranked teams before, the deal on that is to make sure that you don't let it beat you down mentally and physically after you play a team like that, that you find a way to get through it and move on to the next week.
Yeah, I remember playing Blanco was in our district the year they won a Class 2A state championship. Yeah, that was one game. It's funny now when I run into my high school buddies and we talk about that season. We're like, we felt like we had a chance to win every game except that one. And then we realized after about two series, like, yeah, boys, it's going to be a long night.
Yeah. So Franklin, the number one team in the state, did beat Florence 73 to six. They did lose 73-6. We should point that out. However, the game that I think that was surprising some folks is that we thought Gerald was going to beat struggling Robinson, and lo and behold, the Robinson Rockets beat Gerald 50-43. So both you guys
darn
wound up taking it on the chin there. And
my heart just bleeds.
And I did text Jeff and Snoop on Friday when I was driving up to the Metroplex. I had to go way up north to Leander. I thought, yeah, I'm gonna run through Northwest Williamson County and see how it all looks right now. So I rolled through Andice and I rolled past the rolling farmland and there and you know in the bosom of Jeff Howell's nurturing and his adolescent and youth
right.
development.
It's God's country.
Rolled through there and got on the road, and I was gonna go on the road from Florence to Gerald to see where the true, as you call it, the DMZ, the demilitarized zone mm-hmm. was. I was going to look for that. But then the GPS told me, no, get off on the Salado Road.
Go to Salado Road.
Yeah. 2843. And I did, past the big industrial plants out there and all that sort of stuff, too. So did all that. But I was out there in far northern and northwest Williamson County there on Friday afternoon. All right. So that was just to let everybody know where things were with regard to the ongoing battle between Jeff Howell and Purple Buffalo's daddy, because they do engage back and forth. All right, it is time now for the notebook.
Jeff Howell's Longhorn Notebook.
Somebody just didn't want you getting to the Gerald part of 487, which I said that's when you see the outhouses and like a sheep's head stuck in a fence. That's how you know you're at the Gerald side. Five plays that made a difference in the game, Craig. Let's do this. Let's just rip this Band-Aid off, pick this scab, and get after it from Saturday's 32-24 loss for Texas to Oklahoma State. Play number one, first quarter. Oklahoma State's got a 3rd and 8. It's their first scoring drive. Texas is already up 7-0. Mm-hmm. Spencer Sanders is pressured. And I thought the defensive line actually, for about first 3 quarters plus, did a really good job of getting pressure on him. They flush him toward the sideline. It's an incomplete pass. It looks like Texas is going to get off the field. But nope, Keandre Coburn gets flagged for a horse collar tackle. That's not the biggest problem, though, Craig. It's that this defense, we saw it in the Oklahoma game and we saw it in this game, when they have those penalties, the opponent just bam, 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 comes back yep. and attacks right away. You've got a 12-yard pass, a 14-yard run, a 20-yard pass. They're in. Not only are you not off the field, now they're in field goal range, and now you have to practice really good red zone defense. You've got to try to at least hold them to 3, which they do, but that the penalties and just kind of the lack of consistent, I don't know if it's, Sark would say, mental focus, if it's consistent intensity, consistent intent, whatever you want to call it, just wasn't there for Texas for all 4 quarters or for complete drives on Saturday. Play number two, nobody needs to be a rocket scientist to figure out this was one. It's the pick six in the 2nd quarter.
Yep.
Texas starts the drive with 8 minutes to go in the half, and they're at the Oklahoma State 44. You're starting in plus territory.
Coming off the
– after the DeSean Jameson interception, yeah. you're in a great spot, but you have 2 quick 0-yard runs. You're quickly in 3rd and 10. Casey Thompson we asked him after the game what happened on the pick six, and he said it was just a confluence of bad things that led to that play going awry. It's a pick six. So that, folks, is what we call a double-digit point swing. It's a 17-3 game, similar to points we saw in the Oklahoma game. If Texas puts that in the end zone, Craig, and you're up 24-3 mm-hmm. with about 5 minutes to go in the first half, I'm not going to say that game is over, but it's getting to the point where you might start warming up the bus if you're Mike Gundy.
Well, if nothing else, it probably forces Oklahoma State to get out of their game plan and start throwing
yes.
the ball, which is what Sark wanted them to do, be able to throw out of necessity, not by design.
Take Jalen Warren out of the game, put mm-hmm. the game solely in Spencer Sanders' mm-hmm. hands is where Texas wanted it. It didn't get to that point. Even if you get a field goal and you're up 20-3, you're 17 points with 5 minutes to go in the first half. You're still – Oklahoma State's really pushing the boulder up the hill, bottom line, if they get a score right there. Not only do you not do that, but you turn the ball over and they get a touchdown, and it's a one-possession game right off the bat. So that pick six was monstrous. There's one more play in the first half, though. I want to go to Oklahoma State's last scoring drive for play number three. So Texas gets the ball back after the pick six with 5:13 to go. 3 plays, minus 7 yards, 1:26 off the clock. Oklahoma State gets the ball back with 3:47 to go. There's a 9-yard run by Jalen Warren on a 3rd and 9, on a 3rd and 12. Now, at this point, it's under a minute to go. Oklahoma State, if they don't, if it's an incomplete pass, Tanner Brown's looking at about a 50-yard field goal, which is, it's dicey.
Because he had taken over the place kicking duties,
right.
and it was his longest of the year had been 20 going
right.
into the ballgame.
So a 50-yard field goal in that situation, if you're Texas, you'll take that. Instead, on 3rd and 12 on that drive, Spencer Sanders hits Tay Martin for 11 yards. Now it's a 39-yard field goal, still not automatic, but a much easier shot. So because you give up 9, you allow them to convert 3rd and 9, and you give up 11 yards on a 3rd and 12, now instead of holding them scoreless before the half, now they cut even further into the deficit. They tack on a field goal right before the half. Play number 4, this is going to sound weird, but hear me out. After Texas takes a 24-13 lead on their first possession, of the second half, you get the Bijan Robinson 38-yard touchdown run. A 60-yard punt by Tom Hutton that rolls out of bounds at the 7-yard line.
Yep.
You say, okay, it's a punt. But Texas, not only do they start to drive at the 7-yard line, but immediately Junior Aguilar gets flagged for a false start. Now you're behind the chains. Texas ends up going 3 and out. That was the first of 4 straight 3 and outs Texas had in the second half. Cameron Dicker's punt, it's a 43-yard punt, but Oklahoma State starts their drive in plus territory. And again, you're able to hold them to a field goal, but that next Oklahoma State drive, it's a 9-play, 43-yard drive that ends with a Tanner Brown field goal. That's the drive where Ray Thornton gets flagged for roughing the passer on an incomplete pass on 3rd and 9. And, to the letter of the law, based on how it's legislated on the
body
field.
Weight
now,
thing and all that.
Yes, it's a flag. Do I hate the penalty? Yes. Do I wish it wasn't called in football today? Yes. But it is what it is, and it was called. And again, you have a great series where you can get off the field, but instead you end up giving up points. Even though you hold them to 3, you still give up points. I just thought that sequence, Greg, there was a moment in the first half, and I think Texas ended up scoring on a drive, but Mike Gundy had a 4th and 1 in kind of no man's land. We're looking at the field right now. I think anytime you're in between the 40s, it's kind of in no man's land.
Yep.
It doesn't do you much good, I think, to punt right there based on field position. You go for it, and you're only losing about 20 yards worth of field position there in probably a best-case scenario. But he opted to punt, and two things. When you've got a punter like Tom Hutton, who's probably going to be your first-team All-Big 12 punter and probably a finalist for the Ray Guy Award, he's definitely a contender for that. Mike Gundy just seemed real content to know, I'm just going to play field position. I'm going to let my defense do what they do and not panic and not press. So credit to Mike Gundy for kind of following his plan throughout the day. And then play number 5, it's the failed 4th and 3 where Casey Thompson has a scramble. He's tackled short of the line of scrimmage. The problem with that drive, Craig, the first play of that drive is a 9-yard run by Bijan Robinson. Mm-hmm. He doesn't touch it the rest of the drive. So that's something sarcastic and figured out. Is you're not in a position, and this leads into the other thing I wanted to talk about, you're not in a position where you can just kind of bleed clock and, grind games out. You got to keep your foot on the gas. And I think that part of it, Craig, I think that's a systemic issue going on. By the way, that capture 5 plays that made a difference in the game. That bleeds into kind of the systemic issue that I'm in the process of writing about at Hornets 24/7. I'm planning on having this column up later today. But I started looking at it this weekend, and I looked at a 31-game stretch of Big 12 games. This 31-game stretch of conference games starts with the 2017 regular season finale, where Texas lost to Texas Tech 27-23, where Texas had a 10-point lead with about 10 minutes to go. And so there's a lot of Texas has been in a lot of one-possession games, and I'll get to the number here in just a minute. But the Oklahoma State game on Saturday, it was the 9th time in the 31-game stretch where Texas has had a double-digit lead in the second half and allowed an opponent to either tie the game or take the lead at some point in the second half. So it's now, again, that's not all on Sark. Sark's only responsible for 2 of the 9.
Right.
But at some point, Craig, that's a mentality thing. That's a systemic issue within the program because it's the same players that has to get fixed. And Sark said
that's the commonality because you know how I am. I'm real big on the unless there's a direct correlation I'm not real crazy about using a past coach's numbers to indemnify the coaches of the current. But when several of the players span the time frame there, like you said, there's a lot of the same players that were involved in these games.
Right, so nine times in Texas' last 31 Big 12 conference games, they have had a double-digit lead in the second half only to see the opponent come back and either take the lead or tie the game. So including those nine games, there's been four other occasions in that 31-game stretch where Texas has held a double-digit lead at some point in the second half but ended up in a one-possession game. And I went back and looked at the games, the Baylor, Kansas, and K-State games in 2018 and the TCU game this year. Those were all games where Texas had a double-digit lead, had a chance to put it away, but you find yourself needing either a last-second drive in. There were some of those games, Craig, like the K-State game in 18, they had to bleed like the last 4 minutes off of the clock after being up 19-0 at halftime. The Baylor game came down in the south end zone, came down to the very last play with Charlie Brewer throwing it in the end zone. The Kansas game, where they clinched a berth in the Big 12 title game, they needed to recover an onside kick late in that game to prevent Kansas from coming back. And then we all know the TCU game where you had the fourth and goal at the one, you don't make it, then you give up the 99-yard drive. So I mentioned those first nine games. Then there's those four other games that I just mentioned where Texas had a double-digit lead, but it turned into a one-possession game. Then there's been five other times where the Longhorns saw a second-half lead disappear in a loss. The West Virginia game in 2018, the TCU and Iowa State games last season, and then in 2019, and then the TCU and Oklahoma games last year. Four of those five losses came in situations where Texas had a lead, Craig, inside the last 4 minutes of a game and couldn't finish it. Those 18 games, Craig, factor into the 31 possession games Texas has played since the start of the 2017 season. Think about that. Over half of your games in a four-plus year stretch have been one-possession games. And by the way, Texas' record in those 31 possession games, probably what you think your record should be in one possession games. You're 15-15. It's a coin flip's chance. This program, and what Sark mentioned after the game, I lost my train of thought getting into the numbers, but what Sark mentioned after the game is, he said, we can't be in a mindset of just hanging on. Mm-hmm. That was how Tom Herman wanted to manage games. Mm-hmm. If you go back and look at how those games were managed, so he's got to – it's on him. Like I said, it's not – it didn't start out at his problem. He didn't create the problem. But now he's got to fix it where you've got to break this team out of this issue. Okay, we got the lead. We just got to hang on. No, that's where you go for the throat and you develop a killer instinct and you go finish somebody off. Yes, I understand their opponents, especially in conference play. I understand they've got scholarship players and they've got coaches that are paid well too and they develop players. But when you've got a chance to go put teams away, if this program wants to get ideally where it hopes to be, where you're competing for the conference championship year in and year out, and you're competing for a spot in the college football playoff, you've got to get to the point where you develop that killer instinct and you can finish people off.
Yeah, Sark did tell us on the postgame show, he said, we're a little mentally fragile right now. He just said that. He said, we're just a little bit fragile right now, and he said, and we've got to fix that. And I'm sure he'll say something similar in the news conference here coming up top of the hour.
But that's the key, Craig. He's got to fix it because this team, this bleeds into something that we talked about in the offseason. We probably don't talk about it as much as we should year to year. Think about the leadership. Like, think about all the stuff Texas was dealing with last year. It's almost a miracle they won seven games because you had Sam Ehlinger and you had Joseph Osai and you had Taquan Graham and Caden Stearns. You had guys that were really strong, had really strong leadership presences about them. And I know Bijan Robinson talked about it after the game. Bijan was asked about it. He's like, I've got to get more vocal. This team is not in a position where, for lack of a better term, you've got a player in a position to do so that's going to MF somebody to get things right.
Yep.
That you're not a player-led team like that right now. That's got to come from the coaches.
Yep.
And I think it would be effective coming from Sark because he's not a screamer. He's not a hollerer. He's definitely not an overcusser. If that stern message comes from a guy where you haven't heard it before, it probably sticks more than a coach that just has a constant case of the red ass.
We'll hear Coach Sark talk about that more coming up. All right, that's our notebook for this hour of the program. We have Inconceivable coming up, and then the news conference when we continue with Live at the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Well, we got a couple of things that it means today. A little bit of technology involved, and then some things that are a little bit weird. First of all, the technology. Now, it's been said that on this program by none other than Snoop Daniel himself that he can get a little bit wary of technology when it comes to air travel. Is that right, Snoop?
Right. I'm not an air guy.
I mean, have you flown much in your life?
Oh, twice.
Okay. All right. So you've flown two times total in your life?
Maybe three, but for sure two.
Okay. So you probably would not be on board with hypersonic travel. Am I correct? That's something that could get an aircraft from New York to London in just 90 minutes.
Ooh.
Compared to about 3 hours for a Concorde and between 6 to 7 hours for a regular jet. Hermaeus, which is an Atlanta-based startup whose goal is to develop hypersonic aircraft, believes they're testing a new type of engine will be capable of reaching Mach 5. That's over 3,000 miles per hour. The engine's designed for a small unmanned hypersonic aircraft that they're creating for the Air Force, but scaled to a bigger size, they think they can do it. It could be on a passenger plane. Can you imagine being on a passenger plane going at Mach 5? Snoop cannot, however. So I use
Mach 3 razor blades.
Okay, that's about as Mach as you'll get there. Okay. Yes. All right, a couple other things. First of all, they've uncovered this mummy, 5,300-year-old mummy. And in this 5,300-year-old, it's Otzi the Iceman. They discovered it 30 years ago in a glacier in the Italian Alps. They've since, in doing more research, discovered that this 5,300-year-old mummy is covered with tattoos. Tattoos.
Say what?
Yeah. Yeah, tattoos. The meaning of the tattoos has been debated ever since the discovery by a couple of hikers. Many of the tattoos were found to be lines drawn along areas such as the lower back, knees, wrist, ankles, areas where people most often experience ongoing pain as they age. So there's some researchers who believe these tattoos to be an ancient treatment for pain. So, you know, if you got pain, maybe you should head for the tattoo park.
Snoop, where are you at on tattoos? I know you have a fear of needles.
None. I don't have any.
Okay.
Scared of needles. Right. Oh, yeah, I'm over time. Sorry.
All right. Yeah, I know we're up against it here. So I just want to – there's one other thing I want to do. There's an artist who's trying to draw attention to the disappearing water in the Dead Sea. So he did some painting here, Jeff, and then took photos of it. He painted a whole bunch of people completely naked. And they're painted white, too, on top of it. So
that's disturbing.
Yeah, Jeff's looking at the photo now. It's people in various stages of physical fitness, and they're all painted pale white.
I like they just put some dude's crack, like, right front and center.
Yeah, there you go. I'd leave that there for you out there. On that note, we're heading into the press conference room. We'll get you ready for Coach Sarge's news conference. That's next when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM, 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.